welcome one, welcome all, step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 114 is on its way. Howdy, everybody. Portal Game Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. We are a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. I am your host for this episode, The Brant. Kathy will be with me in a little bit. This episode 114 is entitled, Sir, Your Tauntaun Will Freeze Before You Pass the First Marker. Because, boy, howdy, is it cold in Connecticut right now. Everybody was, quote-unquote, worried about winter and whether it would come. Obviously, there's plenty of people who'd rather not see the cold weather. And it has come with a fury. We kind of got a classic Northeaster here and hit us with a bit of snow. And then the warmth pushed in and loaded us up with rain here in southern Connecticut. Ice and rain, and then just flash freeze. It dropped 10 degrees in an hour, and now it's 0 degrees, and yeah, I'm almost stuck in my driveway. It is 2.5 inches of ice on my driveway, and tomorrow schools are looking to close and delay, and then 45 and rain come back in, and we should melt out Wednesday and Thursday and kind of be back to a little bit of normal and see if we get hit with snow, but I think I'd rather take a foot of snow than 2 inches of ice, so that's kind of been crazy. Say all that to let you know that our regularly scheduled plans got interrupted between storms and ice and cold and chaos and all sorts of other things. So was kind of planning an episode with Brian and an episode with Kathy, and Kathy had to leave to go help friends, and Brian wasn't able to make it over, and we were able to play some games together, but recording got kind of thrown off here a little bit. So I didn't want to bring you a full-on solo episode, so I'm going to kind of split this one. Kathy's got a bunch of things she's been doing, and she's got to put our daughter to bed and whatnot, so she's going to do that and then jump on here to do some reviews with us. But kind of a shorter episode with all the chaos and whatnot. But really, right now, it's just review, review, review. I am playing games and reviewing games for you, and that's what you're going to hear over the next several episodes. Me reviewing, Kathy reviewing, Brian reviewing, if I can get other people like Larry or Gary or somebody out here to review. But we're going to pump through a lot of reviews. We've been playing a lot lately and a little bit of a backlog with all the events and things that have been going on. So I want to get all of that out to you. What's happened at the store? I mean, the big thing is the kind of makeover that they've done there. A lot more games, a lot more shelving. Demo tables been up. Larry and Brian especially been working a lot on that, kind of facing the store, coming up with new ideas, play to wins and all sorts of things. So check that out if you're in the area. It's been really cool. Keyforge has been happening. And man, last Thursday, the game night was hopping. There was like 50 people between Magic and miniatures and Keyforge and board games and RPGs. Like, it was the night to be there. The demo table had 5-6 people around it. So that was really exciting. I asked Brian how things are going and sales-wise, and he said, yeah, well, we're definitely up from last year. We haven't had, you know, what we had now, all this chaos with snow and ice and cold where people really don't want to go out. And people have been going out, so it's been going well so far. So we'll see how that goes. But again, if you're in the area, definitely make a trip to stop in terms of all that. As far as us, Kathy and I have set out on the campaign Rise of Fenris for Scythe. We're playing this with just the two of us. As I've kind of hinted to with Legacy and campaign stuff, it just works so much easier if you play with somebody in your house. We set it up on a table and left it there so we can just kind of set up each game from what's already there, and we're working our way through. I don't know that I'm the biggest fan of Scythe. I know people love it, and then when I look at it, I'm like, oh, I enjoy that game. You know, it's just not a top 10 to me, and it really drives me to want to play Gaia Project and Terra Mystica with all the kind of like action selection and feeling a little bit hindered on that. It really just feels like make your engine and go. We're playing with two players. So I think that's going to be a little bit more so than the, you know, attacking and worrying about all that. But so far, sorry, I'd heard the campaign just like hands down make the game way better. Even people that didn't really like Scythe really liked it after this. So I'm excited on that front. The first, they're not really spoilers here. I'm not going to say anything specific. But the first one didn't really do anything. So it was good because we haven't played Scythe in a little bit. So it was just kind of reminding us how to play Scythe. And then there was like a decision point at the end. So we did the decision point. We did the second one. The second one was neat because it changed up the game. It didn't crazily change up the game, but I don't know that it's trying to do that. And I know Kathy was super frustrated. She got stuck with trying to get that efficiency engine going, and mine kind of cruised, although she ended up beating me in the end with that in terms of money. So that's kind of what's happening there. It's an interesting system that you kind of collect your money at the end of each game. I guess this is a spoiler. And then you can spend money on some upgrades and things that you get. There's my one spoiler. And that's kind of neat. And there's a different way that it scores who wins at the end. I'll leave it to that so I don't spoil that. So the first game was just, hey, we're playing Scythe, and there's a decision point. The decision point was neat. And then the second game was kind of a little frustrating. It didn't really feel different. There was something to it. But this third one's kind of opening up the story, and I think the story is where this could really get interesting. So we'll see where it goes from here. I know people love this. I know it's probably really going to be up there for favorite expansion, best expansion of 2018. So I want to jump on that train. And all that. So that's where that's happening. Let's see. What else? Working on Dice Tower Award nominations. Obviously, mum's the word here, but I'm just excited to be part of this. So, BJ, Board Game Gumbo, and I just kind of took a night and collected all the nominations. So now the nominations are out. Nope, not for you, for us. So we can see everything that's there, and we will have people like kind of nominate their favorite games and then vote. So took a chance, called him. He's down in New Orleans, and we chatted for a while and put all that together. So that was fun to do. And then my goal is going to be to play as many of these, although I have never seen so many nominations. I think there were 42 nominations for best game of the year. So that shows you it's going to be an interesting year. I think one of the reasons people have not liked 2018 is that we're seeing a breadth of different types of games, and people are moving to different areas. And so suddenly it's like, this person I played with really liked this game, and this person really liked this game, and this person really liked this game, and none of us liked each other's games as much, and we're seeing a little bit more of that. So that'll be interesting. And then last, while we're talking Dice Tower, I should just mention that their Kickstarter is live and running now, and Dice Tower is really important to us here on the Portal Gaming Podcast, because they are the network of which we are a part of. And they've always been really nice to us. Eric has come to the store many times, just talked on Dice Tower Tonight, how he had stopped in and come to events and just hung out with us and, you know, whatnot there. And Tom and the gang came up those years ago. They let me work with them at the booth and just support us in all sorts of ways. So we want to repay the favor. So if you've got any extra money, if you watch their content, if you listen to their podcast, if any of that's relevant to you, throw some money their way. They have some rewards. Think of it like a PBS pledge drive. You are not paying $50 for a sticker or a card. You're just giving them money, and they're giving you a thank you in terms of that. But definitely check out that on Kickstarter and back them if you can. Awesome. That's kind of what's happening. So I'm going to review a couple games, and then I'll bring Kathy in here to review a few more. And we'll be on our way. Like I said, kind of a quick episode. So I'm going to start with Outlive. So Outlive is a game we got from Dude Games. Dude. At Gen Con. And that was really nice of them. They gave me that and another one, Magic Maze Kids. Which I have played as well. So we'll review that in a little bit here. So Outlive is a post-apocalyptic kind of action selection. Rondel. I don't know. Kind of worker placement game. So you have a bunker. And you're trying to score the most points with your bunker and live through that. So each round, you're going to flip like an event that happens, and there's kind of a negative thing, oh, this region collects less or whatever and whatnot. And then players are going to go in player order, and you kind of have like a rondel of spaces on the board. There's a boat, and there's a forest, and there's some cities, and some water treatment plants and different things. And what you're trying to do is move around, and your workers have like strength, so 3, 4, and 5, I believe, and they can kind of act in the space they move to. So you can move them two spaces, stand them up, or lay them down. Maybe it's lay them down. I can't remember which. And you get to do that space that many times. You're basically collecting goods, and you're collecting kind of the classic things you would want in post-apocalyptic. You want food. You want canned food. You want water. You want computer parts to be able to do things. like metal and wood, I think, to build with. And ultimately, you're going to take all those actions. So what's kind of interesting is if I go to a space where you are and my strength is higher than yours, then I kind of get to steal things from you unless you discard bullets to defend yourself. So we can kind of attack each other, although it's very Euro-y in that sense. And you can never go on the same space twice within a round. So once you place a worker, you can't. So there's kind of this bigger puzzle that's a little bit limiting. I know for Brian, he got a little frustrated with that, and that element, that puzzle was interesting. Like, oh, I want to go to that space, but I need to move that first. But then if I move that one in, that's not what I need. And it's kind of interesting. So you go through that whole round, which is really the meat of the game, making all those decisions. And then there's a whole night phase where you do a bunch of things. But basically, you have to feed your survivors. Then you have to give them water. You react to the radiation in the air. You can try to complete the event that came out or discard it, and if you give up the resources to discard it, you collect it for points, and then you're building rooms and putting survivors in rooms to kind of activate those rooms, as well as fixing items that you find around. So you find weapons and, oh, I fixed this grappling gun, or I fixed this camcorder, or whatever it is, and those can give you bonuses throughout the game. You do that for several rounds. I want to say six. Yes, it is six rounds. And then there's kind of an end game scoring where all your survivors that are left are worth points, because you can lose survivors if you're not able to feed them. And the items that you built, they can like connect to give you bonus points, and, you know, just a variety of kind of different categories to gain points. Whoever has the most points wins, and that's the game. It was pretty neat. It was definitely a thematic Euro. I definitely felt like I was moving around and trying to gain these things. Obviously, the system was a little bit mechanical, like you can only move two spaces, but it kind of makes sense. Like, you're traveling, and how far can you travel in a, you know, whatever, a day, and be able to gain whatever's there, so you're spending your time. So that kind of made sense. But it was very puzzly, and the puzzle was, like, good and bad at the same time. Like, it felt like, oh, I like that there's a puzzle, but it felt sometimes, like, frustrating. Like, ah, I'm just limited, and I have to do this, and I'm now on this path, and, ah, that's going to mess this up, and I can't get water or food, and those are the things I need, and now my survivors are going to die, and I'm behind the eight ball in terms of all that and whatnot. And then just the balance of, like, how many rooms should I be building? So there's a lot of good think, but sometimes the think got in the way in terms of all that. So overall, enjoyed the game. Took our copy, put it in the demo library, so it's there for people to try out. But I really liked it. I liked that. I know Brian was a little more frustrated with it, and I wanted to have him on to state some of the things he was. But ultimately, I enjoyed the game. I thought it was neat. I think, for me, it would really be like playing that game with people that post-apocalyptic theme really is strong, right? So like a Defenders of the Last Stand, maybe even a Zombie Side, where they were looking for that theme, and the game isn't too heavy that's there. It's definitely a medium weight game, but not too much. That'd be the group that I'm looking to play that with. Myself, there's probably some other things that I would play instead at this weight of mechanics. But that's where I stand on Outlive from Dude Games. Let's see. I got to play Vault of Dragons. We were given this by Galeforce9. Thank you very much. And Vault of Dragons is their new Dungeons & Dragons board game. Galeforce9 has a pretty good history of taking IPs and making good games. So in Vault of Dragons, you are in Waterdeep. It's obviously the city that, for board gamers, Lords of Waterdeep makes famous. And Waterdeep is also a very famous city in the D&D lore. And you're trying to break into this vault. Now, in the city of Waterdeep, coins are called dragons. So the Vault of Dragons is the place you're trying to break into to steal all the coins. And that's the game. It's a race game. So you're racing to open this vault and then get in and steal the items inside. So you got to keep that in mind. What happens is you lay out a series of city tiles. It's a four by three grid. And, then players get five actions on their turn. And the actions are gain a coin or a dragon or, pay to put followers out. So you have wizards, rogues, and warriors, and you can pay one, two, or three coins to put them out on the board. And then you put them on a single space. You can take an action to move them from any space to any other space, so the connectivity isn't a big deal. You can battle other players for the space, because you want to be the only one on a space. You can do whatever the space says. So obviously there's 12 of them, and they're all double-sided, so there's a lot of different things. But they tend to give you coins. Or ultimately what you're trying to do to get in that vault is up your game. And so you want to get magic items specifically and treasure. The difference is treasure is one use, magic items is one use per round, and then it comes back to your hand. So those are the kind of things you're doing. Once the round is over, I should go back. Oh, I'll go back to dungeons in a minute. But once the round is over, then every space you're on, you kind of collect resources in the upper corner. So it's not the same as the action. There's something different. You collect all that stuff, and then you go on to a little phase where you lay out treasures and magic items, and you've gained rumors throughout from going to taverns and things. And whoever has the most rumors gets first selection from that little draft. So it's nice. It's kind of engine builds naturally, like you're getting these items at the end of every round, because it kind of goes unlimited rounds till somebody wins, but you're getting more powerful naturally. So that was good in terms of that. And then all your rumors become old rumors, and old rumors go away. So they last for 2 rounds in terms of using them. The other key element is dungeons. You can run through a dungeon. So dungeons and battles work the same way, fights. So I'll put those together. So basically, you look at the units that you have, and if you have a wizard, you roll a d12. If you have 2 wizards, you still roll 1d12. Same with if you have a rogue, you roll a d4, and you roll a damage die, so you backstab. A damage die is a d6 that can have 0, 1, or 2 hits on it. And you roll a d10 for your warriors, if you have them. So you roll, and then whatever your highest number is. So if your d4 came up with a 4, and the other 2 dice were a 3, you'd take the 4. As well as any damage that you do, the damage would be immediate to the other player. And you take that number, and then you can play cards. So you can add cards to things. So, oh, I'm going to play this sword that gives me +2, but now it's gone. Or I'm going to play this magic item, which is +3 against wizards, or something like that. And you play all those, and whoever was higher will win, and the other player will have to retreat their pieces. So there isn't a loss except that casualty die. If you're in a dungeon, you typically roll a casualty die against yourself, and there's thresholds. There's kind of 3 levels to the dungeon. So if you get by this part, you get this reward. If you get to this, if you roll a 7 or higher, you get this reward. If you roll a 13 or higher, you get this reward. You complete the dungeon, and then it kind of ups the game. When you complete a dungeon, you get a secret, which is like a face-down tile that doesn't, so you don't really know what's in that dungeon. You get that tile, it gives you +1 to all your rolls in future dungeons. And if you get 3 secrets, so basically 3 dungeon runs, then you can open the Vault of Dragons. And now you can go to that Vault of Dragons and you can try to win the game, which is you need to have 20 or higher. So it's kind of tricky with 20 or higher if you think about it, because if you roll a 12 on a d12 with a wizard, you're still 8 short. So you need a lot of upgrades and things that you're ready to go for. So it's this interesting, like, do I try to control the city and get a lot of resources and kind of win a long-term game, or do I just kind of run the dungeons and hope that I draw the right items at the right time? And I thought it was really enjoyable. So the only thing that was strange was I kind of did that speed strategy. I'm just going to run the dungeons, drew cards that said you get these additional bonuses and whatnot. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to go for that. And I ended up winning the game in, like, 30 to maybe 35 minutes, and the box says 90 minutes. So I tried to go back and look at the rules, and it seems like we did everything right. So it's interesting. It's never like a negative to be, oh no, this went under the time, you know, allotted, because we're always complaining about how the box time is wrong. But it was interesting. It didn't feel bad at that rate. Like, it felt perfectly fine to play for that amount of time. So I didn't feel shortchanged or anything, but it was quick. The game suggests, you know, doing extensions of 4 and 5 secrets that are needed and things like that. So there are those kind of options and things. But all in all, I really enjoyed the game. Definitely want to play it again. It was a 3-player count. Try a 2-player, try a 4-player. And there's some other little elements. It was pretty thematic. I guess I felt a little bit more like a thief than I did like a hero or a warrior or whatever. But yeah, it was neat. That is Vault of Dragons from Gale Force 9. Okay, last review is a little bit temporary, but I want to talk about it because it is new and kind of some new hotness here, is Gugong. So this is from Game Brewer and Tasty Minstrel Games. It was once called Forbidden City, and I guess they retitled it to Gugong recently. So you'll probably hear more about this, because I think Brian will talk about it. So we got a chance to play this, and Larry had called us and was like, wow, this game's amazing, you got to try this out. And so we watched the Patriots football game, and then we set it up, and we played afterward, and we played 2-player. And we weren't wowed by it. We definitely didn't think it was a bad game. but it didn't blow us away, and we wondered if it was the two-player count. There were definitely some unique mechanisms, so I want to talk through that, but I kind of gave my first impression, which I really feel like is what this is, and I hope to get another chance to talk about it as well, because I know there's a lot of people who really, really like this game, and I want to, too. So what's happening in this is there's a whole bunch of sections on the board. You're trying to score points over four rounds, kind of classic Euro in that sense. And there's a bunch of sections on the board, and you have a hand of cards, and you're trading items. You're going to town and trading items in order to like kind of get favors in each of the sections of towns. So it's a little bit underhanded, I believe. And essentially what happens is you trade a number. So you have a card. I have a three, and there's a two in a slot on one section of the board. So I can trade my three for the two, right? I kind of trade down, and that's allowed. If I played a two or a one, then I would have to either give up some of my servants, which are like workers, or I'd have to discard a card, or there's kind of some other ways that I would get that, or I just change cards and don't do any actions. But once I exchange cards, then I get to do the action on my card that I played and the action on the space. So typically what happens is the action on the card like targets another section of the board. And then the space targets the one in that section. So what are you doing? Well, you're traveling around, kind of like picking up resources and areas and bonuses. You're building the wall for the city to score points. You're gathering jade, which is going to kind of be like an exponential system at the end of the game, the more jade you have. You have to move up on this heavenly path of peace and get to the top, or you actually have 0 points at the end, so that's important. There's an influence track, which can give you bonus cubes and breaks all ties. There's a ship section down along the bottom, and the ships are really interesting because they can give you like a double cube that counts as two workers or a bonus card, so you now have an extra action every turn, which is really big. And there's like a section that has kind of your classic like end game scoring tiles and in game bonus tiles. So that's kind of all the sections of the board, and you're going through. What's interesting is each action can either kind of be done at a simple level, like, oh, just move one space, or just place one servant in this area to upgrade, or it's like you could spend a whole bunch of these cubes, but the cubes are really limited. So you've got like maybe 4, 6, 7 servants at the beginning of a round, and all the action spaces take 1 or 3 or a whole bunch, and so you're really trying to limit. So even if you have 4, 5, 6 actions, you've got to figure out, well, how am I going to spend all of these? And that was the part that just wasn't very dynamic for us. We felt like, well, I need to spend a bunch over here, and I need to do this action, and then there are a bunch of actions I just need to do. Or in a two-player game, Brian was able to just kind of like spam 2 actions and score a lot of points. And so he just kind of kept going back and forth on that. So we'd be intrigued to play with 3 and 4 because I think there'd be a lot more going on and to think about. I do know for me, it's neat when it's like, oh, it's really limiting, so you have to plan a lot and you have to think a lot. I appreciate that, but sometimes it can just feel frustrating. Like, I didn't, and I can't, and now there's nothing I can do, and I'm just kind of riding out the game in terms of that. And there was just some weird, like, I love, like, Euro games should always limit most things. Like, oh, you can only score this much. But it was a really weird limit with the jade, which is the strategy I went for in terms of that. But it was interesting because I had called Larry, and we were talking over it, and as I talked over it today, I enjoy talking about the game. And so that made me like, okay, I want to try this again, but I think I need to play it at 3 or 4. Or even there's a solo here, so I may try the solo or try this with Kathy. I don't know. With Kathy, I'm really trying to hit Rise of Fenris right now. So that's why I wanted to talk about it. Like, I kind of have this like, ooh, I didn't feel good about it. It was just a game. But so many people are like, this was in my top 10 for 2018, or they're just playing it now. I think the Kickstarter might have fulfilled in November. And I really think this is going to be on a lot of people's radar, even if it's not on mine. And right, and it's this weird line of like, I want to review and tell you exactly what I think about the game and how I felt and how it works. But I also want people to know, like, hey, people like this game. And that was even kind of funny with last year with my top 10 list. It was like, I really want to tell you, and I think that's what people want to hear, my favorite games. But it was so important to me to have a breadth of people so that you could hear about a lot of games. I thought Kathy chiming in with her games was really important because they were different from what the rest of ours were. I mean, I know that Larry and Brian and I tend to have similar tastes, you know, and we're playing a lot together, so we're getting kind of the same enjoyment. But I still think that was a big deal for 2018. I want people to see that the fact that people like a lot of different games is really good. It just means you're not always playing your favorite game and somebody else's favorite game at the same time. from a given year or whatever. So that's going to be kind of important. But that is Gugong from Tasty Minstrel Games and Game Brewer. We should come back and revisit this one. We'll see where it goes. But like I said, thinking about it is always a good sign, even though my first impression wasn't super positive. Cool, I'm going to pause right now, and Kathy's going to come back in a little bit here. And we're going to move on to a couple more reviews with her. See you then. Promised. How are you, Kat?
Oh, good.
It's a lot of up and down, so telling everybody.
Yeah.
With weather and friends. And not, well, not bad things with friends, just helping out friends with various things.
There's
and
a lot going on today.
Ice, so we kind of went from there. So we're going to talk about some games. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Cool. What do you have first up for us?
First, I want to talk about a game I actually got to play with Brian's son. He was over one day, I was watching him, and he asked if we could play a game he had never played before. So we went and dug through our stack of kids' games, and we landed on Magic Maze Kids.
Yeah, so Magic Maze Kids is from Dude Games, and I talked about Outlive prior. So this is the other game they gave us at Gen Con, so thanks to them for that. And I also got a chance to play this with Zephra. So Magic Maze is the cooperative game where you're not supposed to talk about what you're doing and try to complete kind of these objectives of moving around common pawns. And this is the kids' version. So how did it go with Adon?
Well, let's remember he's three. We did the tutorial version. And he needed a lot of reminding that he was only allowed to go in the two directions of the cards he had. But he enjoyed it, and it was really cute. The production of it is very kid-friendly. There's
chunky
giant
pieces,
sand timer, and the theme is fun.
Yeah, so it's neat. So in this one, you're trying to get two pieces to, like, reach each other. Like, they're trying to become friends or fall in love or whatever it is. And what's really nice is it brings you through all the scenarios and teaches you the game. Now, Magic Maze kind of does that, but it starts you at a pretty high level. And then it just kind of ups the difficulty, where this is kind of teaching you to play,
very
which
basic.
Is really great for kids.
Yeah.
Zephyr loved this, and she loves the other one, but she wanted to take this to, like, go teach friends. So I thought that was neat, because she's like, oh, I could just walk them through the different scenarios as we go. I think it maxes out. There weren't too many of them. There were like six or something, and then you were at the game or something. But, I mean, at that point, kids are playing a kid's game. So I'm excited to use this. We're going to do a kid's game day, like just like all kids' games, and I'm excited to use this one for that. I think it'll be really good.
Yeah, I think that'll be great.
And then maybe get something in at the store as well for that. So, cool. Magic Maze Kids, thumbs up, two thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Nice. Awesome. Next up, we got to play. We kind of went back to an oldie here, which I had played, although it took me a while even to play this. But this is Istanbul. So I always think of Istanbul as like the game that beat Concordia for the Kenner Spiel, because this is one of the first years they did the Kenner Spiel, right? The Spiel is like family game or game of the year. Kenner Spiel is supposed to be like the connoisseurs game of the year or whatever, or a lot of people call it like the advanced strategy game. But in the grand scheme of advanced strategy games, these are usually pretty light. So Quax of Quedlinburg won that this past year. So in that sense, I love Concordia. And so I was always like kind of mad with this game. But then when I finally like played it a couple times, like, oh, this is really fun. And so I was like, oh, I got to get a copy so I can play with Kathy because I think she'll really enjoy that. So Istanbul is kind of like a route game. You're trying to move your merchant amongst these 4x4 tiles of different locations. and you're collecting coins and you're collecting resources. There's like spices and gold and I don't even remember what, rings, gems or something.
Yeah.
And then you're cashing them in a variety of ways to get rubies.
Yeah.
And it's a race to 5 or in 2-player games, 6 rubies. And whoever wins, you know, gets there first wins the game. There's a whole bunch of different spaces and things you can do, but it's a pretty light game in terms of that, although each space there's arguably 16 different things you have to learn what's happening,
yeah,
and understand them, and you're kind of limited where you can move. You have these assistants you drop off, and then you have to go back and kind of pick them up or call them all over, in terms of that. But I thought it'd be neat to kind of go back. We're always going forward with games. Like, what's the newest? And I thought it'd be neat to talk about a game that's a little bit older. So what did you think of Istanbul?
I am glad we went back. I really liked it. We were actually discussing this earlier about aesthetic versus,
mechanics.
And I definitely am a fan of aesthetic over mechanics, although the mechanics obviously need to be there as well. But, So Istanbul was one I definitely enjoyed for its aesthetic. I love how the colors are deep and vibrant, and the theme is fun. You're just navigating through this like marketplace almost. The pieces are nice. I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
I like all the choices.
Yeah, no, I really like Istanbul, too. Again, you know, that's kind of my thing, is I always kind of thumb my nose at it because I like Concordia so much. Although, when we were playing this, you were like, oh, I think I like this better than Concordia. And I was like, step back! I actually went and looked for Concordia on, you know, to see, because I don't think we have it in the store. So I was looking for one online to pick up a copy so you could play, so we could be like, no. No offense to Istanbul in any sense. I think Concordia is one of my top games, so in terms of all that. But yeah, great publication. I didn't mention this is designed by Rüdiger Dorn, and it's from Pegasus Spiel and AEG. AEG always makes great productions, so they were one you got to meet at PAX Unplugged. We talked to Todd Roland there. And got Scorpius Freighter, and he was showing us Tiny Town. We were rolling the dice and other things. Yeah, yep. He's really nice. So AEG's always been really good to us in terms of that. And then the last game we played just yesterday in our snowstorm, or post-apocalyptic thing here.
Ice.
We got to play Wingspan, which if you want to go from old game to hotness, this is the hottest game right now, hands down. I think what that comes from, this is from Stonemaier Games. It's not designed by Jamie Stegmaier. It's designed by Elizabeth Hargrave, who I think is a first-time designer. But Jamie's definitely put the Stonemaier touch on the game. And so what Jamie's doing now, or Stonemaier Games is doing, is they're no longer kickstarting games, and they're trying this new thing where when the game is designed, published, printed, and sitting in a warehouse, they announce it. And they say, hey, this game is coming out. Here it is. Here's the press release. And pre-orders are going up on our page. You can buy it directly from us now, and it'll be in stores. So this one's going to be in store March 8th. And then, boom, everybody goes hog wild because, okay, it's happening, right? The game is upon us. And so it's really interesting, given that he came from the Kickstarter universe, where it's like, we're going to make this big epic game. We're going to plan all these goals and everything. And then you'll get the game 8 months to 16 months from now, which
right.
I totally get. I mean, when you look at that stuff, it's candy, it's exciting. People, you know, people get excited for all that stuff. But it's always just funny to me that people are just handing over $75, $100 plus shipping for these things to get the game a year and 3 months from now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I'd rather just take $100 and go buy something that I know is tried and true, or that I'm really pretty sure we're going to have a good time with. You know what I mean? So anyway. We got a copy of Wingspan. We thought it'd be good to have a copy to be able to play in the store, get it going, use it on the demo table and all that. So who are the first guinea pigs? You, me, and Brian, because we got to make sure we get this down. So I'll describe a little bit of the game. So it's a 4-round game. You're trying to score points with your feathers, and you're kind of creating a bird aviary. So you're making a tableau of bird cards. There's 170 unique bird cards in the game. The Blue Jay was excellently thematic in that he was Whenever you activate him, he steals an item from the bird feeder. He steals food from the bird feeder, which is... We have tons of blue jays around here, and that's exactly what they do. They push all the other birds off our bird feeder. So I thought that was great. And on your turn, you're picking four different actions. You can place a new bird. You can collect more food, which is what you have to spend to put birds out. You can have birds lay eggs, which are worth points and used for things like placing more birds and other events. And you can draw more cards. So there's no standard draw card. And then you kind of activate your whole tableau. Each round, you're going for different goals, and there's different ways to play that. You're pulling food from a bird feeder, not furred from a bood feeder, which are dice that get rolled in this really cool bird feeder dice tower that Kathy built for us. Well, it's in the game, but Kathy built it.
I put the cardboard pieces together. It was so epic.
And yeah, and kind of rolls from there. I think aesthetic is through and through where this game is at. I'm going to let you have a chance to say your impression, but mine is very simple. The game is really, really good. I had fun playing it. I don't think it's an amazing game, but it's going to get played a lot. And I think people are going to call the game amazing because of its aesthetic. I think that's a huge part of it. So that is my review of Wingspan. Where were you at on it?
Yeah, I thought I am a details person, and I thoroughly enjoyed each card. Had a little fact about each bird that was featured. It had where you could find it in the world. There was a little map down at the bottom. So you could definitely use this even as a learning thing if you're interested in learning about North American birds. Huh. Which I find fun that you can have that in a game as well as just the fun of the game itself. Yeah, I really enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what Brian is thinking with this game in terms of how many copies to pull in. I don't know if he like divulges that stuff, but this seems like the perfect game to have set up on the demo table with some copies there, you know, with a $5 off tonight, or I mean when it first comes out, you just put it out, it's gonna sell, you know? But this just seems like a great game to pull in 10, 12 copies of and work your way through. I just wonder with that pre-order system, you can go get it now. You don't have to get it through our store, especially if you're not in the area. You can order it straight from Stonemaier Games, you know, if you're looking to. But it'll be interesting. And you kind of hit the nail on the head with, like, expansions. What were you thinking?
Oh, yeah. Well, I noticed, so in the bottom of the card, they have the little map of the world. And all of the birds in this game are from North America, so I was like, oh well, there we go, expansions. There's gonna be South American birds and Asian and European birds, who knows.
Yeah,
it could be or not. And one other thing I will say, I really feel like they missed something in the tiebreaker. So we totaled up our scores yesterday, and Brian and I tied, and so we had to go to the rule book for the tiebreaker, and it ended up being the most food. I feel like what they should have done is have you add up all the wingspans of your birds, because as is the title, it's just seems thematic, and the wingspan of each bird is printed on all the cards.
Or it could be your personal wingspan.
Well, then somebody always would win the ties.
I just want somebody to make a game called Height about people doing various things. Because I feel like there's a little bit of a thematic disconnect. Now, you were saying, no, wingspan is like a defining feature of birds. I get it. It's a feature of birds. I mean, it's like, I'm obviously being sarcastic here, but, like, height is a defining feature of people. So if they called Agricola Height, you know, the board game, because you have people and you're making new people and you're moving them around to do things.
Right, but think about it. Bigger birds tend to be birds of prey. Smaller birds are going to eat the seeds and berries.
Bigger people tend to be athletes. Smaller people tend to be people who crawl through holes to get things.
Huh. I don't know that I feel
like I was thinking of like Lego games. That's where I was going. Not like actual like thievery or something.
You heard it here on the podcast. Brent is pretty sure if you're short, you're a thief.
No. All right. So yeah, I really liked Wingspan. Question for you. So we love Fleet, the dice game.
Yeah.
You like it as well, right? So to me, the games are not similar. One is a roll and write, and one is a card playing game. But they're both engine building games, big engine building games, right? Yeah. I would argue Fleet has a bigger engine build. There's a lot more going on there.
There's so much more.
There's
going
more
on.
Reading and understanding, like, your options are constantly changing in Wingspan, right?
Yes.
Your options are static and you're making the choice amongst many choices. Whereas Wingspan, it's dynamic because you're drawing new cards to change your options and see what you want to do. But so there's your classic, like, Fleet isn't really even trying to have an aesthetic, right? It is a roll and write, so it's a pad with a pencil and you write stuff down. And it's nice, it's laid out well, right, in terms of that. But, like, Wingspan has a bird feeder dice tower and colored eggs and beautiful art on the cards.
Yeah.
Like, it's drawing you in. Now, to me, Fleet is a better game. It's still my game of the month. Where do you stand on that, given that you said aesthetic is such a big deal to you?
Okay. I kind of disagree in your saying that Fleet doesn't have a lot of aesthetic, because those roll and write sheets are, like, gorgeous. They're full of art on just the, like, all the little spaces you're filling in, like all the boats and the
yeah, but they're not like
buildings.
Norman Rockwell paintings of lighthouses with
right.
sea vessels coming in.
But
that
it's
would be
not well true.
They're
but
cartoony.
It's not a white piece of paper with a black and white grid.
That's true.
That you're just checking things off. You're like coloring in fish shapes.
But if you were gonna vote best art or best production
well,
in 2019.
It would be Wingspan. Okay. I'm just saying, I feel like you're cutting Fleet a little short. But I also feel like you're cutting Wingspan a little short in
Gameplay,
because where, and you mentioned it, whereas Fleet is static and you know what's there, other than the dice rolls, you know what you can mark a plan and just go with it. In Wingspan, you have to be extremely flexible and you have to know how you want to balance. Okay, I have my own private goals. I also have, you're getting points from just the layout of your board. But then there's also a contest every round that changes. And you have to decide which ones are worth following. Like, is it better to just forget about certain parts of it and just go all in for other things? Or is it better to kind of balance yourself out? I feel like there's more thought there than you're giving it credit
for.
Oh,
I definitely think there's thought in the game. I'm not saying it's basic.
Right.
No, I'm just saying that I feel like, as far as, like, engine building goes, the engine and all the things, it's easy to forget things in Fleet because there's so much going on.
I'm not disagreeing that Fleet is more.
Do you want to say if you like one better than the other, or you don't want to?
I don't know yet. I've played Fleet a couple times, and I played Wingspan one time.
But here's what I will say. If we get every month in 2019... we get a Fleet-level game, and we get a Wingspan-level game.
Great year.
It's going to be an awesome year of gaming, because that's two great games right at the start of the year. I mean, are they heavy? Are they complex? Are they big? Are they involved?
Not really,
but for solid, you know, games that basically almost present as light games, but become medium in strategy, they're great games.
Yeah.
Like, I'll have a great time if I play 12 of those, or 24 of those this year.
Yeah.
And how will I pick a top 10 list out of 24 games like that?
Right.
You know? Now, would I like to have some deeper, heavier games? Would I like to have Gaia Project 2, The Revenge of Gaia? Yeah, let's do it. Do I want Gloomhaven Forgotten Circles? Yeah, hope it comes out this year. We can play more. I just want to finish Gloomhaven.
Yeah, we should definitely do that.
But yeah, what a great start 2019 is off to for gaming. So
yeah, absolutely.
All the 2018 poo-pooers, I don't care, because 2019, here it comes. I'm excited. Sound good?
Sure.
All right. Hey, I think that'll do it for episode 114. I called this one, Sir, Your Tauntaun Will Freeze Before It Reaches the First Marker. Because it is bitterly cold out there.
It is very cold.
All right, that is that for this episode. So until next time, I am your host, The Brand.
And Kathy.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street, Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on January 21st, 2019. Please send any questions to us at portalgamepodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Don't forget to check out their Kickstarter going on right now. For more awesome podcasts, you can also visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Hey! Thanks for listening.